Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Good afternoon, everybody. Okay, today we will continue with our study of the Sutta Nipata, and we have been examining the Alavaka Sutta. And before I go further, I give a brief summary of what we've covered so far. First, the background story to the sutta, which comes in the commentary. I just give a little summary of it. The story is about a being, a demonic being. In Pali, these beings are called yakshas. In Sanskrit, yakshas. This demonic being has been living near the town of Alavi, and this being has been demanding sacrificial victims from the town. And the king of the town has been sacrificing other human beings, including the children. And after giving children from each family, when the sutta opens, the next day the king would have to sacrifice his own dearly beloved son, the crown prince. Okay, at this point, the sutta opens. The Buddha has realized that this terrible event is to take place the next day. So the Buddha has gone to the cave where this demon lives, and he has entered the cave, and he has met the demon in a kind of challenge of wills. And in this challenge, the Buddha has partly subdued the demon, made the demon humble and ready to ask questions of the Buddha. The demon has asked the Buddha 8 questions. 4 of these I discussed last time. These first 4 deal with, we might call, the mundane aspect of human welfare. I explained that the Buddha's teaching is concerned with 2 kinds of human well-being. One is concerned with mundane or worldly well-being, shijianda, Li, shijianda li, right? Yi, li, shijianda yi. And the other is chu shijianda li. So supramundane or world transcending welfare and happiness. Okay, the mundane worldly welfare and happiness means how to achieve true spiritual well-being and happiness in one's mundane dealings within the world, and how to lay a foundation for well-being and happiness in one's future lives. The transcendental or world-transcending welfare and happiness deals with how to achieve liberation, nirvana. Okay, in laying a foundation for mundane welfare and happiness, the Buddha explains to the demon that first, faith or confidence is the treasure, the best treasure for a person here and that the Dhamma, which we might take to be morality, the observance of precepts of good conduct, is what leads to happiness here and now, that truth is the best of all flavors, and that one who lives by wisdom is the one who lives best. And last time I spoke, I gave a more detailed explanation of that verse. Okay, now the demon asks the four questions that are concerned with world transcending or supermundane well-being. Okay, so here I will recite them in Pali, then I give the explanation. I'll just read in English, then I recite the Buddha's reply in Pali. Okay, the demon Alavaka asks, how does one cross? Here in the English translation, those who have the book, I'm on page 19, verse 3. How does one cross the flood? And this is the flood of repeated births. How does one cross the sea of existence? How does one transcend dukkha, that's suffering? How is one purified? And then the Buddha replies, Sadayatarati ogam apamadena anavam viryena dukkamacheti panyaya parisuchati. He says, by faith, or here translated by confidence, one crosses the flood. By vigilance, or by diligence, one crosses the sea. By strenuous effort, or by energy, one transcends suffering or unhappiness. By wisdom, one is purified. Okay, this is, again, this is one of those verses which is very condensed, very compressed, and when one expands it, one can come upon really the whole teaching of the Buddha. Okay, here, what's interesting to note is the first line of this verse begins with the word sadaya, which means by faith. And if we look back at the previous verse, where the Buddha is explaining what brings a person's welfare and happiness in this life, again he says, faith is the best treasure for a person. So we see that faith plays a critical role in achieving welfare and happiness, both in this life and also in achieving the ultimate, supramundane, world-transcending welfare and happiness, liberation. But the nature of faith, actually faith, it's always one particular faculty. So it has one flavor, this faculty of faith. But it functions somewhat differently in the two cases. So we could say, in relation to mundane welfare and happiness, faith is confidence in the law of karma, confidence in the fact that good and bad actions produce good and bad results, faith in the existence of wise beings who can give one guidance in leading a wholesome, righteous way of life, faith in the objective validity of ethical principles. Faith that there are standards of good and bad that transcend personal opinion or merely the general agreement of other people, but standards of objective moral value that are built into the very nature of reality. So this, we could say, is the content of faith in relation to one's mundane welfare and happiness. In relation to the ultimate or world-transcending well-being, faith would be trust, confidence in the Buddha's, let's say the Buddha's revelation, disclosure of the ultimate truths of existence. This would be his teaching of, they call the deep principles of reality, the principles that are to be fathomed, to be understood by the highest wisdom. The principles, for example, of the three characteristics of existence, the four noble truths, dependent origination. And especially it is the faith or confidence that it is possible by following this path that the Buddha teaches to bring an end to this whole mass of suffering. That is why in the early Buddhist texts it said so often that a young person, it's usually phrased as a young man of good family, goes forth into the homeless life out of faith that it is possible to make an end to this whole mass of suffering, of birth, old age, sickness, and death. And in order to follow this path, one places faith in the Buddha as being a fully enlightened one, as one who has fully understood the nature of existence, the nature of the human condition, and whose teaching, the Dhamma, discloses to us the principles of the human condition that we have to understand for ourselves. This doesn't mean that the Buddha demands blind faith in himself. When we come to the Buddha says, investigate, examine, test the teaching out for yourself. But we test, we examine, we investigate. But at a certain point, we then have to decide, do we trust the Buddha and then commit ourselves to follow this teaching? Or after testing, then do we decide, maybe the teaching's not correct and I'll just go on living my ordinary life in the old way. Okay, once one determines that one trusts the Buddha, one places confidence in him, then one goes for refuge to the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, that is the three jewels. The Buddha as the perfectly enlightened one, the Dharma as his teaching, the Sangha here as the spiritual community of those who have realized the truth of the teaching for themselves. And then one undertakes the practice of the Dhamma with the intention of crossing the flood. And what is meant by the flood here is this flood of samsara, the flood of birth and death. Sometimes the commentators identify the flood with what are called the four floods of the mind that keep us in bondage to the cycle of birth and death. These are the four floods of sensual craving, the flood of craving for continued existence, the flood of wrong views, and the flood of ignorance. And when the verse says, by faith one crosses the flood, it doesn't mean that merely by faith one can cross the flood, because one doesn't gain liberation by faith alone. We have to take, to understand the verse, we have to take the verse as a whole. One just can't take one line out of context. What the line is really saying is that faith here is a necessary condition, because it is through faith that one undertakes the rest of the practice. Faith is actually the first of the five spiritual faculties. And we find that the verse is making implied reference to all five of these spiritual faculties. So faith is the first of the spiritual faculties, because it is through faith that the other spiritual faculties will arise. Faith is that act of commitment, act of trust, by which one overcomes skepticism, holding back, reservations, and plunges into the stream of the Dhamma, the stream that carries one down further and further to the great ocean of liberation, the great ocean of Nibbana. Okay, but now to complete the work that starts with faith, one then has to make a diligent effort. And that is why the second verse says, upamadena anavang. That is, by vigilance or by diligence, one crosses the flood, or crosses the sea, the ocean. Okay, here this ocean is the ocean of birth and death, the ocean of samsara. And according to the Buddha's teaching, any single lifetime is just one single wave on this beginningless ocean of existences. In fact, we could say, not to speak of one lifetime might just be one molecule on the ocean of existences. But if you know about anything about modern scientific cosmology, They speak about the Big Bang. So this is the time from which the beginning, the Big Bang is actually the beginning of a cosmic cycle, when it said 17 billion years ago, 15 billion, 17 billion years ago, the universe started to expand from just an infinitesimal point, started to blow out to the point where it's reached its present dimensions, which seem inconceivably vast to our understanding. And the universe is continuing to expand, expand, expand. Then there are different theories. According to one theory, at a certain point, it will reach a point of maximal expansion and start to contract till it falls back upon itself and then collapses upon itself and comes back to the point of a kind of compression in upon itself. And some say that will mark the end of the universe. Others think it will just continue to expand and expand forever outwards till it dies a cold death. But to us, that seems impossible. Because if we understand just the way we breathe in and out, we know when we breathe in to the furthest reaches where the lungs expand, then the lungs have to contract again. When the lungs contract, they have to expand again. And so it seems that the universe is the same. It expands and contracts. And so each of these in the Buddhist text is called a cycle of world contraction, a cycle of world expansion. Each cycle of world expansion and contraction might be considered as just one rise of the wave and fall of the wave on this ocean of existences. And the ocean itself consists of an infinite number, countless number of these waves of cycles of world expansion, world contraction. And within any given cycle of world expansion, world contraction, we go through hundreds and thousands, millions of lives. Okay, so when we consider the inconceivable number of existences that we live, then one could see the vast background to the teaching of the Buddha. And what the Buddha teaches is the way to rise out from the bonds that hold us to this cycle of existence. And the way to emerge from this requires the practice of his teaching with diligence. Diligence is appamada, which means not being negligent, but practicing continuously, uninterruptedly, especially practicing continuously, uninterruptedly, in the development of mindfulness, practicing mindfulness together with energy. Okay, as a foundation for the practice, one needs qualities like faith, some learning, diligent study, right understanding, but to break through to direct realization of the teaching, to really penetrate the truth of the teaching, one needs experiential wisdom. Experiential wisdom means to see the ultimate truth of things. And to see the ultimate truth of things can only come through refining the faculty of attention till it is able to observe things at an extremely subtle, we call it microscopic level. Now the human mind has that capacity to see things at this microscopic level. It's not something that lies beyond the scope of the mind. But in order to see things at that level, and I don't mean looking through a microscope, but I mean seeing with one's own inner faculty of observation, the mind has to be trained through a continuous, uninterrupted mode of practice. And that uninterrupted mode of practice involves training the faculty of attention. And by attention here, I mean the faculty of mindfulness through attending mindfully to every occasion of experience throughout the day, from the moment one wakes up throughout the day to the moment one falls asleep, being mindful as consistently, as continuously as possible. It's not possible to have that unless one has very mature faculties from previous lives. Not possible to have that merely by willing to have it. Seeing I'm going to, by making a determination, one day I'm going to be continuously mindful. Generally, one cannot develop that faculty of attention even just by practicing short few days retreats. But that faculty of attention builds up, it gains momentum through continuous practice. It's something that develops over time. And so as one goes on practicing from one day to the next, the faculty of mindfulness can be sustained more and more continuously with fewer interruptions, with shorter interruptions, until it can remain on its object, on different changing objects, on different activities through the day. As the faculty of mindfulness remains on its objects more consistently, then the ability to focus the mind on any object gains momentum, gains facility, gains in skill. And as the faculty of concentration gains in skill, then one can go more and more deeply into any object on which one focuses the mind. And so when one has mindfulness working together with concentration, then one has at one's disposal the equipment, the instruments for developing wisdom. But how is one to develop one's mindfulness in this way? That requires diligence or vigilance. So that is why the Buddha so often has placed emphasis on this vigilance or diligence as a means for crossing this ocean of birth and death. Then in the next verse, he says, Viryena dukkhaṁ acceti, by energy or by strenuous effort, one transcends unhappiness or suffering. here the key word is energy. Now, in the line I just spoke about, by vigilance or diligence is meant continuity in the development of mindfulness. So that implies, I said that the verse implies the development of all five spiritual faculties. So this second line implies the faculty of mindfulness. This third line implies the faculty of energy. So one has to be energetic in developing that mindfulness. One has to be energetic in removing the obstacles that one faces in practicing the path, the inner obstacles, the different hindrances that come up, the mental obstructions. One has to be energetic in developing the wholesome qualities, the good qualities that promote the purification of the mind. And so, as one removes the hindrances, the obstructions, as one energetically fosters the development of the wholesome qualities, the good qualities, then all of these good qualities are gradually becoming consolidated. They are working together to promote samadhi, concentration, to promote sati, mindfulness. And so when mindfulness is working now, backed by concentration, now one is able to attend to the nature of experience as it's unfolding from moment to moment, mindfully attending to the process of experience itself and seeing how, at a very subtle level, call this the atomic level or cellular level of experience, how events are occurring, how material and mental phenomena come into being, persist for just a brief moment, then dissolve and pass away, followed by new moments of experience arising, persisting and passing away. One is now observing directly the moment-by-moment impermanence of sankharas, formations. This is no longer impermanence as just theory, but one is able to see within the bodily phenomena the sankharas, the physical formations, coming into being and breaking up and passing away. Focusing upon the mind, one is able to see different feelings, mental states coming into being, passing away, sometimes with incredible rapidity, arising, passing, arising, passing. And so now one is seeing as it really is with wisdom. And as one sees with wisdom, then the defilements, greed, hatred, delusion, and all the other defilements connected to them start to become weakened, to lose their grip on the mind. So in this way, one becomes purified. That is why in the last verse, the Buddha says, Panyaya Parisujati, by wisdom, one is purified. Okay, so now, when the Buddha spoke this, gave this explanation to the demon Alavaka, then the demon asked the Buddha some more questions. We're now on page 20. Now Alavaka asked, and I have to say, the translator, he threw this off a little bit by changing the word, the translation of panya from wisdom to knowledge. Because in the Pali, it's the same word. He says, katangsu labhate panyang. It should be, how does one acquire wisdom? But then he says, how does one obtain wealth? How does one attain fame or good reputation? How does one not gain friends, but literally, how does one bind friends to oneself? How, when passing from this world to the next world, does one not sorrow or not repent? Then the Buddha gives an answer. He says, Sadhano arahatang dhammang nibbana patthiya susu salabhate panyang apamato vichakkano pati rupa kari durva utata vindate danang sachena kitting papoti Dadang mitani gantati. Okay, one acquires wisdom by placing faith. Again, that word faith comes in here, translated confidence in the book. By placing faith in the Dhamma or teaching of the arahants for the attainment of nirvana with a desire to learn. In this way, one gains wisdom if one is diligent and discerning or intelligent, though the translator has attentive. But I think discerning or discriminating is better. Okay, so these are some conditions for the gaining of wisdom. First, again, to gain the true wisdom, one has to have confidence or trust in the teaching of the truly wise ones, the liberated ones. If one just wants to get worldly knowledge, one doesn't need that faith, but just to gain knowledge won't lead to wisdom. But one places faith in the teaching of the enlightened ones with the aim of gaining liberation, gaining nibbana. And then one has to be diligent in learning, diligent in applying what one learns. And one has to be discriminating in one's, when one listens, knowing what when one listens, knowing how to distinguish the meaning, to understand the meaning properly. Okay, then the next verse takes us, it seems, to a more mundane level for achieving more mundane benefits, like wealth, reputation, and friends. To achieve wealth, one has to do what is proper, what is suitable for gaining wealth. One has to be resolute and to be industrious, to be persistent in it. to be energetic in one's pursuit of wealth. I think these points are quite evident, quite just sensible. Then the next point, I think, is very important to understand, that to achieve a good reputation, one has to adhere to the truth. If one speaks falsehood in order to gain to gain benefits for oneself, to, say, secure a good position at work, to advance oneself, to get high pay, to get other worldly benefits, one is always courting the risk that by speaking falsehood, one becomes vulnerable to being exposed. And once one is exposed for falsehood, one's reputation collapses, and then one becomes distrusted by others, an object of mockery, or an object of just complete alienation. One is completely shunned and avoided by others. So it's very dangerous to try to advance oneself through falsehood. But somebody who is ready to adhere to the truth, even to forego benefits to remain firmly dedicated to truth, will always gain a good reputation. And then by generosity, not only giving material things, but by giving help, by giving good counsel, by giving friendly thoughts, friendly smile to others, then one binds them to oneself as friends. Okay, so then the Buddha goes on and says that the householder with faith who has these four virtues, that is truthfulness, goodness, or Dhamma, energy and generosity, will not sorrow after his death. I think the sense is that at the time of death, he will not sorrow, because he'll know that he has lived a good life. And so now the Buddha says to the demon, he says, I can challenge you to consult other ascetics and Brahmins and ask them whether there are any other qualities higher than truth, self-control or self-mastery, generosity, and patience. And by this time, the Buddha has already won over Alavaka, transformed him. And according to the commentary, Alavaka has, by listening to the Buddha's discourse, Alavaka has become a stream enterer. He has gained the first path and fruition of enlightenment. His demon nature has been changed over into a divine nature. And he has become a trusting disciple of the Buddha. So now Alavaka says, why should I consult other ascetics and Brahmins? Today I know which one will prove to be for my good in the future. And he goes on to say that the Buddha has come to stay near Alavi for my benefit. Today I know what should be given to achieve great results. And from today, I will wander from village to village, from town to town, paying my respects to the fully enlightened one and to his perfect teaching. Then there's a little bit more. The conclusion to the commentary. Just when Alavaka finished speaking this, the sun started to rise at the horizon. And just at that moment, the king was arriving at the cave together with his men, bringing his son. The king was very gloomy, bringing his son to offer as the sacrificial victim to the demon. And so the king came with the little baby, came to the cave, gave it to the demon Alavaka, very frightened that Alavaka was going to devour the little child. But Alavaka tucked the child in its hands, then held the little child up against his breast, started rocking the little child up against its breast, smiled at it, then took the little child and gave it to the Buddha. Then that little child, whose name was Hataka Alavaka, was to grow up and become one of the foremost lay disciples of the Buddha. And he was to become a non-returner, and he achieved quite eminence as one of the Buddha's foremost lay disciples. Okay, I thank you all for your attention, and may the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all.